This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, Democracy Under Attack, How Former President Donald Trump Concocted a Plot to Overturn the 2020 Presidential Election, which resulted in a victory for Democrat Joe Biden. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. In the United States, the president is elected by an electoral college, not the popular vote. In November 2020, then-Democratic candidate Joe Biden won the electoral college vote and the popular vote. On January 6, 2021, what should have been a ceremonial ritual to count the electoral votes, in which Mr. Biden won 306 to then-President Trump's 232, the world watched in horror. A mob of pro-Trump supporters who refused to accept the legitimate results stormed the Capitol. Chaos and carnage ensued, according to Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards, who testified before the House of Representatives committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol, an assault on U.S. democracy. Ms. Edwards was one of many witnesses, from former senior members in the Trump Justice Department, whom then-President Trump tried to weaponize to overturn the election results, to local and state election officials who investigated the false claims of voter fraud, who testified before the congressional panel. The bipartisan January 6th committee has conducted more than 1,000 interviews over the past year and have been holding public televised hearings over the last several weeks to illustrate that former President Trump's claim that he won the election is false. On this edition of Encounter, we will talk with political analysts about what the hearings have revealed about the intricate and multifaceted plot by former President Trump to hold on to power despite his conclusive election defeat. Unwilling to accept the decisions by dozens of courts that his claims of voter fraud were baseless, then President Trump and his allies engaged in a series of actions, from intimidation of state and local election officials, coercion of the Justice Department into declaring that Trump, not Biden, won the election, and finally, when those efforts failed, summoned a violent mob to stop the peaceful transfer of power. Mr. Trump watched while many supporters shouted, "Hang Mike Pence," referring to then Vice President Mike Pence, whose sole job on January 6th was to preside over the ritual counting of the Electoral College votes. Donald Trump had falsely asserted that Mr. Pence had the power to change the state's electoral votes, which clearly determined that Mr. Trump had lost the election. What can we learn from the January 6th hearings? How close did the United States come to losing its hard-won democracy? And what impact will the hearings have on U.S. public opinion and the future of the rule of law in the United States? For more on the significance and broader ramifications of the January 6th committee hearings, we turn to two distinguished political analysts. Francis Lee is professor of politics and public affairs at Princeton University in the state of New Jersey. And Matt Bennett, he's executive vice president for public affairs at Third Way, and that's a center-left policy group based here in Washington, and they join me via Microsoft Teams. First to you, Francis Lee, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Carol. It's great to be here.
And Matt Bennett, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let me turn to Francis Lee. Francis, I welcomed you back because it was you who were at these microphones last year, right after President Biden's inauguration. And we were talking about the insurrection at the Capitol. And now here we are witnessing these public televised hearings by the committee. Let me get first your overall impressions of the substance and the style of the hearings that we've witnessed so far.
I think these hearings are doing an admirable job of laying out the events of January 6, 2021, as well as the causes, how the mob was assembled, what the Trump administration was considering as means to stay in power despite the outcome of the election. So in helping to understand what was at stake on January 6, as well as how we got to January 6. So it's clarifying the narrative. There isn't very much that I'd say is entirely new out of the hearings that we've been seeing, in as much as so much of what happened on January 6th and in the aftermath of the 2020 elections happened in public view. And there was a considerable amount of reporting on that in real time. But it lays it out in a clear and cohesive way And it carries an additional weight when it happens via congressional hearing. It makes the front page news in ways that just reporting on what happened often didn't. I mean, in the real time, yes, it was front page news. But as additional information would break after Biden had been inaugurated, that often wasn't front page news. And so I think the narrative is disseminating more broadly now as a consequence of these hearings.
Turning to you, Matt Bennett, I'd like to get your overall impression of the hearings thus far, their substance, style, and so forth.
Well, I've been enormously impressed by the hearings for a variety of reasons. One, as Francis notes, they are laying out a very coherent case. And while they took thousands of hours of testimony, they made their way through tens or hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, the committee has really focused on one thing, which is prosecuting a case, a public case, not a legal case, against Donald Trump. And all the things that they do ladder up to one thing. The president of the United States was attempting to overturn the outcome of a free and fair election. And he knew that it was free and fair. He knew that what he was doing was fraudulent, and he was doing it anyway. And he was using every lever of power available to him to try to do it. The only good news for our democracy is that people in positions of authority at the state level and at the federal level were unwilling to go along. So I think they've done a spectacular job of making that case to the public. They were in danger of kind of creating a muddle because they had so much evidence and so many paths they could have gone down. And I think that they've avoided that quite brilliantly. The other thing that has really struck me about this is we've become accustomed in recent times to congressional hearings being partisan battles between people sitting on the left side of the dais where the Democrats sit and on the right side of the dais where Republicans sit, and basically battling with one another using the witnesses as just fodder in their political battle. This is a throwback to hearings that we used to see that were actually trying to get at the truth. So in the old days, when hearings were conducted like the Watergate hearings or the hearings after the Iran-Contra affair, which involved the Reagan administration in the 1980s, or a host of other hearings through history, you saw members of Congress really trying to talk to the witnesses and get the truth out. And we're seeing that here, and I think it's quite refreshing.
Back to you, Francis Lee. You talked about the importance and the significance of the hearings and the fact that they are laying out in a cohesive way the chain of events that led to January 6th, and we're seeing publicity in newspapers. The question of whether or not this will affect those who still believe the big lie, that is that President Trump actually won when he really did not, is perhaps another issue. But let me ask you to reflect on what you've witnessed so far. What are some of the most powerful moments that you witnessed from these hearings, whether it's the state election workers who were intimidated, the Justice Department? Talk about the most powerful moment that you have witnessed so far.
I think the most powerful moment that I have witnessed was the testimony of state officials reacting to pressure from President Trump to find the votes that he needed to overturn the results. In particular, I was struck by the testimony of Arizona State House Speaker Rusty Bowers, where he talked about the pressure that he was subjected to and the protesters disturbing his dying daughter, the personal vitriol directed his way, and then saying that he believed that the Constitution was divinely inspired and that nothing would cause him to break his oath, the oath that he had taken to uphold it. Very powerful testimony. Well, he was not alone. There were many other Republican officials, unimpeachable conservative credentials brought forward by these hearings, who said similar things about their commitment to the American constitutional system. That kind of testimony packs the biggest punch in terms of showing how far outside of the norms of American politics and American government Trump's behavior was.
Turning back to you, Matt Bennett, the fact that many of these witnesses were, as Francis Lee said, unimpeachable conservatives, Republican officials, who even said that they had voted for then-President Trump. They stood up to the intimidation and refused to cede to the pressure by then-President Trump and his allies to change the results or find votes and so forth. What powerful moments stick out to you during these hearings?
Well, I completely agree with Francis that the testimony of the Republicans made quite a powerful impression given their politics. And I have to say that the two Republicans on the committee, Congresswoman Liz Cheney and Congressman Adam Kinzinger, have been among the most effective at prosecuting this case, in part because they voted with Trump most of the time when he was president, but they broke with him over his attempt to subvert the Constitution and remain in power. I think for me, the most powerful moment so far of the five hearings has been the testimony of Shae Moss. Shae is a normal American, as she put it. She is an African-American woman from Atlanta who, along with her mother, who was also there and her testimony was shown by video, has been an election worker for many years and was very proud of her service. She viewed it as a patriotic effort, you know, to help America. And she did it with absolutely no partisan lean. She just did it because she was a good American who wanted to do her part. And for that, she was viciously attacked by President Trump's allies, including Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, who was one of Trump's lawyers and most vicious attack dogs during the period after the election where he was proclaiming the big lie. And she was attacked by the president of the United States herself. And as she noted and her mother noted, their lives have been destroyed by this. They're under constant threat of violent attack. They've received vicious, racist, misogynistic attacks online. They've essentially had to go into hiding. Ms. Moss noted that she cannot leave her house. She has quit her job. She has gained a lot of weight. She is miserable. And that is a direct and proximate result of the president of the United States, or the former president, president at the time, and his allies attacking this woman for doing her patriotic duty. And it was incredibly moving and horrifying. And for me, that was the most important moment so far.
We'll have more in just one moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. Our guests are Francis Lee, professor of politics and public affairs at Princeton University, and Matt Bennett, from whom you just heard. He's Executive Vice President for Public Affairs at the policy group Third Way, based here in Washington. And both of them joined me via Microsoft Teams. We're discussing the fallout from the televised public hearings about the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol by a mob of pro-Trump supporters intent on disrupting the peaceful transfer of power. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on most of your favorite podcast apps. You may also insert the following URL into your web browser, voanews.com/encounter. And as always, you may follow us on Twitter and connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. If you have a comment about the show or want to suggest future topics, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our program. And Francis Lee, I'd like to turn back to you. With respect to these hearings and their impact on U.S. public opinion, we know that this is a very divided country. And we know even that some stations, network cable stations, are either not running these hearings or distorting perhaps the presentation. I'm referring to some of the right-wing news networks. So how much of a problem does that pose with regard to getting these facts out? And if some people aren't receiving the facts and still believe that the election was somehow stolen, how problematic is that for our democracy?
Well, the reach of these hearings is not universal, that's for sure. Although they have done reasonably well in terms of television ratings, they do much better with Democratic viewers than Republican viewers. The last polling that I saw on the question showed that 56% of Democrats say they've been paying attention to the hearings, whereas only 25% of Republicans say that they have been paying attention. It's also notable that it's a minority of independents who say they've been paying attention. So it is disproportionately a Democratic audience following these hearings. But I wouldn't write off the importance, even if they do not reach most Republicans, inasmuch as the hearings are succeeding in laying out a narrative that this broadens the understanding of what happened on January 6th to those who pay attention. It does increase public understanding and knowledge of what occurred relative to where we were before the hearings. And so it makes progress, but certainly it expects too much to say that these hearings would put the whole matter to rest. That won't occur. These hearings are quite different from the previous hearings that Congress had held investigating the Trump administration. The other highest stakes hearings, of course, happened in the wake of the two impeachments, the unprecedented two impeachments that President Trump was subject to. In those cases, the question was what Congress would do in light light of the information revealed at the hearings. In this case, the hearings don't immediately inform a decision that Congress has to make. Instead, it's the question of how former President Trump will be seen by history, and also whether he will be selected by Republican voters as the next nominee of the Republican Party in 2024. That's really what's at stake here. And so when Matt emphasized earlier that the hearing is designed to prosecute the case against Trump, it's with an eye to those larger questions, both of history and of the future of the Republican Party that's at stake. And they make progress, though it's still very unclear, you know, what the future holds in that regard. I would have to say that the most likely outcome still at present is that Donald Trump will be renominated. But it's not set in stone. This is in play, and these hearings help to shape the future.
Well, turning to you, Matt Bennett, as I said, not everybody is watching these hearings. Some of the cable channels that are pro-Trump channels, as it were, are not even airing the hearings or distorting perhaps their import. Nonetheless, what do you see as a result of these hearings? Of course, the committee says they want to lay out the facts, maybe make recommendations so that such an attempted coup would never happen again. But what else should we expect from these hearings, particularly if many Americans are impervious to some of the facts that are being laid out?
Well, I very much agree with Francis that the fact is most people are not watching, and to the extent others are getting news, it's coming through a distorting lens of right-wing media. However, I do think there is some evident impact already from these hearings. There's a pollster and a political strategist named Sarah Longwell who has been conducting focus groups with center-right or kind of Trump-leaning, mostly women voters in Pennsylvania, and they're a very important bellwether for where the country's going to go on presidential politics. And her focus group that she conducted after the first set of hearings, no one in that group, and these were all Trump voters, wanted Trump to run again. Now, that is not data. That is a qualitative, which is to say there's, you know, only 11 or 12 people in that group. You can't make conclusions about where the country's headed from that. But it's interesting, and it's not something she'd seen before in her ongoing series. So I think there's a chance that these hearings are going to have an impact on voters in the Republican Party who think, I liked Trump's policies, but I may not want to go through the chaos of having Trump be our nominee again. Having said that, no one should ever underestimate Donald Trump's political staying power, particularly among Republicans. Everyone underestimated him in 2016, and he just mowed down all of his competitors quite easily. And so if Trump decides that he wants to run and he aims his firepower at his opponents, like Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, who is often considered the other leading front runner, DeSantis could end up in bad shape. So we just don't know. I do think there's one other very important outcome that we're seeking, that the committee is seeking, and that we may see. And that is that the coup attempt has not ended. It is not going to work with regard to the 2020 election. That's decided, and there is no mechanism by which Donald Trump could be installed as president at this point. But the effort that they made in 2020 is going to be repeated in 2024. But next time, it's going to be much more sophisticated and much more widespread. The kinds of things that Trump attempted to do in 2020 that the hearing is exploring, not the attack on the Capitol itself, but the other things where he pressured people in the states to change the outcome of the vote or to get the state legislatures to substitute their own electors for the electoral college voters that the people of the state chose. All of those things are going to happen again in 2024. And this time, I think it's going to be done in a much more systematic way. And that could mean that Republicans are able to change the outcome of the vote next time. And so that's enormously dangerous to our democracy. That is the most serious threat to the republic since the Civil War. And I think these hearings are vital to get people thinking about that.
Well, back to you, Francis Lee. Given that sobering assessment by Matt Bennett, looking forward to the next elections, how concerned are you that perhaps those people, those officials in states, the governors and secretaries of state, may not be as scrupulous as the ones that presided over the 2020 election, these Republican officials in whether Arizona or Georgia, who stood up to attempts to pressure them to illegally change votes and find voter fraud when there was none? How concerned are you that we may not see these types of individuals? And are we, that is, this country? Does it continue to be in danger? That there is really nothing self-sustaining about the democracy other than institutions and people who may not, as I said, you know, have the same moral compass and fidelity to the rule of law as some of these other officials.
It's true. There is nothing self-sustaining about democracy. Democracy requires people to uphold it, to respect the law. The concerted effort to replace election officials who upheld the count, who certified the count in closely contested states on the part of Republicans in some areas, that's a concern. And certainly will impact the will of these officials in the future to stand up to pressure of this kind. But on this question, I think the outcome of the primaries in Georgia is particularly important. The success that Brad Raffensperger, Secretary of State of Georgia, who resisted Trump's entreaties, who recorded a phone conversation between himself and Trump where Trump was asking him to find additional votes and who released it and who was anathema to Republicans in the state in the immediate aftermath of the elections. He won re-election outright. There will not need to be a runoff. He is the Republican nominee for Secretary of State going into Georgia's elections this fall. And that is a powerful vindication of an official who resisted mob pressure and who demonstrated that it's possible to do so and survive. And so he sets an example, I think, that is helpful going forward. One other point on this question for the future of American democracy, I hope, and I think this is a reasonable expectation, that out of these hearings, new impetus will grow towards an effort to reform the Electoral Count Act, which is the law that governs the counting of Electoral College votes after a presidential election. That law is poorly drafted, and it is unclear on the vice president's role, as well as on questions relating to what constitutes a disputed set of Electoral College votes from the states. And so to clarify that, I think, would also strengthen American democracy out of these hearings. That was a weakness in our political system, one that unscrupulous actors in the wake of the 2020 elections tried to exploit. And to address that can be helpful going forward.
Matt Bennett, I'll give you the last word. In addition to setting the record straight, what else do you expect from these public hearings? Do you expect any criminal accountability, and that would be the province of the Justice Department? Any other change in legislation, such as Francis Lee suggested, reforming the Electoral Count Act?
Well, I think Francis is exactly right. The Electoral Count Act is in dire need of reform. There's a Senate group working on it. I don't know whether they're going to get there or not. It's always a good bet to predict gridlock in this Congress. And so I'm very hopeful that they will be able to do it. And it's absolutely vital that they do it, but it's not guaranteed. As for legal ramifications, we just don't know. I think there will be some. I mean, there have been search warrants executed against the homes of some of the people who have been involved in this plot to overturn the 2020 election. That means the FBI and the Justice Department are investigating them for criminal violations, and it is very possible some of them could be held to account. Obviously, the biggest question here is whether the Justice Department will bring charges against former President Trump. There is no question in my mind that he has violated the law in multiple ways connected to this plot to execute a coup. But I do not know that the Justice Department will bring such a case. That would be a very, very big thing to do. In the United States, we tend not to look kindly on legal action against one's predecessor in power. I think President Biden would be very uneasy about doing that. However, the evidence seems pretty overwhelming. So it's a very tough decision for the Attorney General, and I do not know which way he will go on that.
Well, on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have, but we will note that there will be more hearings in July as the committee has discovered video footage and more evidence that warrants additional hearings, and we look forward to those, and we hope to have you back. For now, I'd like to thank my guests, Francis Lee, Professor of Politics and Public Affairs at Princeton University, and Matt Bennett, Executive Vice President for Public Affairs at Third Way. Thanks to both of you for your terrific insights. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.